You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Massive Report podcast. Well, we've got a full house here tonight. Not all of our usual cast, but we've added, I don't know if we could call him a villain or what. I guess we'll find out here in a second. Ori's here, Murph is here, Bart's here. Adam Taylor from the, is it the Filibuster podcast? You guys cover DC United on a weekly basis, as we do here, sort of the bizarro world of the Massive Report podcast. Is that fair there, Adam?
Yeah, I think my facial hair basically confirms that.
Now, do you call it the Filibuster?
Yeah, we call it Filibuster, the Filibuster podcast. We're all associated with Black and Red United, just like Massive Report on the SB Nation.
Gotcha.
Family of websites. So,
all right. Well, welcome. And we're going to query you and your club DC United as we face them on Saturday afternoon at what I like to call Classic Crew Stadium, as we count down the days to opening up our new park. We're brought to you by Saucy Brew Works. Have they told us what they want us to say about them yet? I forgot to ask you guys before we started.
No. Ori's got some good
things. I wrote a great copy, which I will read again very happily. Let me just get it up here on my
notes tab.
Saucy Brew Works is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Saucy Brew Works. If your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? So go to Saucy Brew
Works. Wow. That is snappy copy. That's like
I had to read advertising copy in school for 2 years in a row. I got the cadence for it.
Madman there. That's outstanding copy. Saucy will be very pleased. And soon we'll be parked at a table, probably in the back where we're out of the way, to do the Massive Report podcast on a weekly basis. I'd say we're 2 or 3 weeks out. We'll figure it out. And I look forward to Saucy being set up at the stadium again. I looked in vain the last two home games and didn't see him there for obvious reasons, that they're trying to keep things simple as we ratchet up our game day experience going forward. Well, Adam, I'm going to kind of let the guys query you on your club at a more granular level, but I just want to check your emotions first as DC goes out to San Jose and just gets drilled 4-1 on Saturday night. What happened?
Yeah, this is, I think, the lump-taking portion of the Hernan Losada era. He's trying to instill a new system that is the polar opposite to Ben Olsen's tactics in a lot of ways. It is high pressing all the damn time. It is very direct and vertical. And, you know, like Ben Olsen, doesn't care that much about possession, but the similarities don't go much farther than that. And so just like we saw San Jose take their lumps when Matias Almeida first came in, DC United's taking their lumps now. It's kind of, they kind of gave us the Bane speech to Batman there. They were born in the chaos. We've merely adopted it. The system is all about creating chaos and thriving in it. And DC United hasn't quite gotten that comfort level there yet. And San Jose exploited a couple of turnovers in the midfield and just, you know, put United to the sword.
God, are you a throw your shoe through the TV kind of guy?
I used to be. I've mellowed out somewhat.
I'm trying to. I think I'm much better than I used to be. I don't want to talk about it. It's very unpleasant. So, Murph, I'll let you kind of take over putting Adam on the couch about not only this particular game, but in a larger sense, the DC United squad as we see it here in 2021.
Yeah, I have the game on in the background here. It's only 3-1 now, so things are not as bad as they get. I was going to ask you about Hernan Losada and just kind of, for Crew fans who didn't pay attention this offseason as much, give some background into where he came from. You already touched on kind of the play, which I was going to ask about, but just where he came from and what the impressions were early on the offseason and here the first couple games.
So despite the start, he's kind of charmed a lot of DC United fans. Everyone seems to be willing to give him a lot of rope. And I think some of that is his personality. He's very straightforward and direct, but in a really amicable way. He's only 38. He's the youngest coach in the league, I think, by a full 2 years. He only has a couple years of coaching experience over in Belgium. He kind of, again, another parallel to Ben Olsen. He was kind of a club legend at Bearscope over there in Antwerp in Belgium. And he went on to become an assistant coach and then very quickly took over the first team and very quickly got them promoted into the top flight. They were a second division club. They had had a rich history, but came on financial hard times years ago and were slowly working their way up. And he's the one that kind of put the capstone on that. And then he had them playing this ridiculous fun brand of soccer where they were actually in first place several months into the season before hitting a little bit of a dry spell and falling down the table a little bit, but they're going to stay up pretty comfortably and easily in the mid table there in their first year up, even after he left, his assistant took over. So he's got this infectious kind of personality and an exciting style of play. And even though he doesn't have a huge track record, he's very clear about his principles and how he wants to play and how he will not compromise on those things. And so he's kind of got us all bought in, including the players and the fans and everyone around the team.
Yeah, it's definitely been quite the start for DC United with one win, two losses to begin the year. I did want to mention, I was on the Filibuster podcast for the MLS Cup final, and I did want to pose this question to everybody because we talked about this on that podcast back in December with Susie Rance of Sounder at Heart. We're talking about cream cheese on a hot dog in Seattle because we're talking about food in our areas. I mentioned Graters. And then she mentioned how in Seattle, people put cream cheese on a hot dog. I want to hear from the other Columbus folks. I see Brian wagging his finger.
Hold on here. I'm a Northwest guy. I lived in Seattle for 4 years. I grew up 2 hours west of there. I have never, ever heard of that. That is not a thing. What? Okay. Where does this come from?
I have no
cream
idea.
Cream cheese on a hot dog? That is not a Northwest thing. It, you know, put salmon on a hot dog, which would be delicious.
Well, Brian, you see, when the Seattle Sounders invented soccer in 2008, it changed things a little bit, including some of the dietary preferences in the Pacific Northwest.
I got, well, I, you know, I don't spend a lot of time there anymore as I'm a proud Columbus, Ohioan. I hadn't heard that one. I'll have to ask my friends back in the old country.
Every time Roland scores, they throw Philadelphia cream cheese on the pitch. But to my actual soccer question, because, you know, DC have lost their last two, but they started the season with a respectable victory in the opening weekend against New York City 2-1. And New York City has proven to be a very solid team in the East. So, Adam, I'm just kind of wondering, you know, was that win more of a fluke or did you kind of see the process of the new tactics, I guess, getting into the players quicker? What was kind of your impression of that win?
A little bit of both, honestly. So the two goals were about the lowest XG chances you're ever going to see. It was like a 30-yard strike from a center back. Just Brendan Heinzeich put it on a rope. And it's a travesty that it wasn't nominated for goal of the week. But I mean, everyone's been hitting bangers this year. So I can't complain too much about that. The other goal was a set piece drawn up on the training ground where it was a looped ball from a corner. Julian Gressel hits it to Russell Knaus at the top of the box. And he just sidefoots it through the traffic right into the corner on the full volley. And it was a great shot, great goal and great design. It's just, that's not going to go in every time, obviously. But in that game, DC United completely shut down anything NYCFC was trying to do, except for one breakdown that I think came off of a couple of bad calls that cascaded that led to NYC's goal. They gave up almost no good chances in that entire game. And then they did the same thing against New England. In that the high press was working. It was shutting down the other team, forcing turnovers. It wasn't leading to the offense that Hernan Losada wants. He wants that defense into attack transition to be instantaneous. We didn't have that part down, but we did see the defensive merits of his system. It fell apart a little bit against San Jose, but I think we saw some of the principles that he wants and how that can work, especially on the defensive side, which is nice because after being a low block team for a few years under Ben Olsen, seeing him the defense really engage in the opponent's half has been really fun for DC United fans through 3 weeks. Like I said, though, the attack wasn't there. Those two goals they scored were not high quality chances by an analytic metric. And then they didn't create much against New England either. They created a little better against San Jose, but not enough to overcome the goals they gave up, obviously.
Adam, let me ask you this from maybe take off the DC fan hat. And just from a soccer perspective, what do you think about the high pressing system? Because we've seen it in MLS, you know, the Red Bulls obviously did it for a long time. And it you know, it created regular season success. It didn't always work in the summer months where, you know, it gets hot and it's just harder, especially if you go down to Dallas or Houston. And then it seemed to, you know, just kind of flail out a little bit in the playoffs. Now that's just one team, just one example. And you see teams do it around the world to various successes. So I'm just curious from your perspective, you know, when you first heard that that was going to be the style of play, what was your reaction?
I was happy to be honest, because we've been calling for Ben Olsen to be more of a high pressing, to have more of a high pressing system for a few years, because he had a little bit of a selective press, and the more he used it, the better the team got. But then he would fall back when there was an injury or something would go wrong. He would revert to this low block that ended up, you know, with a very clear and not very high ceiling. So I wanted to see it because I think it can be a competitive advantage when you don't have the funds to go out and buy Raul Ruy Diaz or Pozuelo or whoever, Carlos Vela. So it makes sense as a chance to, as a way to catch up, really. It's not always the most fun to watch if you're a purist, because you're not going to get the long, intricate attacking moves on either side. But Matt Doyle referred to DC United week one as a demolition derby team. And that's kind of how it was. But if you can get it clicking the way Losada did at Bearscope, you can get a lot of goals going, actually both ways. Cause when the press breaks down, it goes the other way really quickly, as we saw against NYCFC and San Jose, but they can score a bunch of goals if they can figure out how to implement this system. So it could be fun. I think what we've seen in MLS is that playoff success is contingent on having a viable plan B, even if you only have to go to it for one game. And that was the Red Bulls' problem over and over again, is they didn't have that plan B, or they relied on Roy Miller for a free kick inexplicably. I still love that play. But we've seen Seattle do a plan B, Atlanta do a plan B when they won. Toronto had a plan B, C, and D, it seemed like, when they won. So I don't know if Losada is going to be able to get that plan B if the team gets to that point. You know, he's proven to be pretty dogmatic in his short tenure. So we'll see what happens. But I'm happy. And hopefully, you know, as he develops as a coach, he becomes willing to at least adopt a plan B situationally. And we see the team advance from there.
Adam, there are a few clubs that DC United are more familiar with as an organization, as supporters, than Columbus Crew. And I always love to ask the perspective of the other supporters. You cover the team, you do the podcast. When you look at Columbus and DC United coming in on Saturday, what concerns you the most about Columbus Crew?
What doesn't? Honestly, the brightest point I can point to is that you guys have just been 0-0 in the league so far. And even that means, you know, we're probably not scoring on Saturday, but you have such a well-developed roster that fits Caleb Porter's system so well that it seems like you guys are a well-oiled machine that should be set up for success in every competition this year. I've seen DC United supporters refer to this game as unwinnable for us. I don't know if I'd go that far, because it's early days. You guys have a game against Monterrey to handle. So DC United has some opportunities here, especially with the way they run, but Columbus is so good with the ball. They understand how to get Jesse Zardes the ball in finishing spots. You have such a deep bench with BWP, who has killed United so many times. Kevin Molina, like, it's just, I don't even know where to start, really.
So do you see any sort of weakness that you would look to exploit if this was your club?
It's hard. I haven't looked at Columbus that closely, but you have Darlington Nagbe, who's unpressable. Like, he's the most press resistant player maybe in MLS history, and DC United wants to play the press. They're going to have to deny him the ball, and maybe you can force an error out of a center back or out of the keeper with the ball at his feet and try to score that way. But beyond that, maybe a set piece, because that's where United scored goals so far.
Bart, Adam brings up a good point, because we don't know who's going to be in the center on Saturday, because we've had some guys looping in and out, and we have young Buba from right here in Westerville, who for the most part has asserted himself very well, but you know, there was a slip and fall against Monterrey that led to a goal, and that speaks directly to Adam's point, huh?
Yeah, no, exactly. I think, you know, if you're Columbus and if you're worried about, you know, kind of some of the speed in that press, one player that always just sticks out to me, and I'm wondering how he's adjusting in this new transition, a young player, Nemil Assad, who I've always thought is, you know, incredibly talented player, maybe a little bit frustrating, I think, for fans, because it's never seemed like he's really been able to put the whole package together. But I know he only played 45 minutes in this last game. I'm not sure if that was a tactical substitution or if he picked up a knock. What does he bring to the game for this DC team? And do you think he's poised to kind of take that step this season, or is he still going to be frustrating DC United and just general soccer fans?
I'm not sure, honestly. I love Nemil Assad, and I have been really frustrated with him this year. The last couple of games, they're kind of playing a 3-4-3 system, but he's been so deep. He's been almost a third central midfielder, which means that there's nobody attacking on the left side when the ball turns over, and his passing has been really kind of forcing it, trying to force the verticality, which he doesn't seem as comfortable with from that deeper midfield spot. So he's been frustrating this year, but I think if he and Losada can figure out a way to keep him higher and wider, we saw in 2018 what he can do with DC United from that spot. We've seen what he can do with Atlanta. He's a gifted front foot defender for an attacking player. Honestly, his pressing is elite in this league, at least when he's on. So he makes so much sense in this system. And when the ball gets into the open field, you know, that looks a lot like what he was doing with Atlanta when he first came into the league in 2017. So there's reasons to think that it should work, but the last couple of weeks, he's been so deep, and when he gets on the ball and there's nobody to pass it to, and he's occupying the same spaces as the central midfielder. So he's got to figure out a way to not be a deep central midfielder when he's supposed to be a wing attacker player.
Going to be a pretty historic day, Adam, when you think about it on Saturday, because DC and Columbus, two of the MLS originals, and this will be the last time ever that they're going to play at historic Crew Stadium, Mapfre Stadium, Classic Columbus Crew Stadium, whatever the hell you want to call it. And you think back to the early days of the league, these two teams essentially were the two teams playing in conference finals, trying to get to the MLS Cup. DC always thwarting Columbus, DC being a dominant team in the beginning there. But these teams have had so many games against each other at the stadium. One that comes to mind was the scoreboard fire of 2013. Yeah. But I was wondering, outside of the scoreboard fire, one, have you ever been to the stadium and seen Columbus play DC there? And if you have, is that your fondest memory, or do you have other fond memories of Columbus DC games in Columbus at that stadium?
I haven't been to Crew Stadium. I haven't gotten out there. I've only been to Columbus once, and it was for a bachelor party with some non-soccer fans. So we got to the arcade bar, but not to the soccer stadium. I'm trying to think. My fondest memory of playing the Crew is the season opener at RFK when Charlie Davies made his return, his first game. He came in as a sub and scored a brace. I'm trying to think about historic Crew Stadium, and I should have looked back at some games to refresh my memory, but nothing specific is coming to mind for DC United. Obviously, there's the U.S. national team history there, the 2-0 games against Mexico, but beyond the scoreboard fire, which was a game that DC United lost, nothing jumps to mind.
Well, let me ask you this. When I was watching this San Jose game, they showed the injury report, and it took two flashcards. I don't know what they call them, two graphics to show everybody. For Crew fans, who is out? Who do you know will not be playing in this game Saturday? And how has that been, impacted things for you guys this season?
How much time do we got?
As much as you want.
Yeah, Bill Hamid is out, which is huge, obviously. Chris Seitz has performed admirably in his place, but he's not Bill Hamid. Steven Birnbaum is out. He's the best center back on the team. Donovan Pines is the best young center back on the team. He's also out. They're both very good in the air on set pieces as well, both attacking and defending. So those are both huge misses. Kevin Paredes is one of the young teenage homegrowns. Another one, Griffin Yao. They're both out. I think Paredes would be an upgrade at left wing back over Joseph Mora at this point. Mora's been so hesitant going forward that it's just really lacking. And Paredes is a natural attacker who is learning the defensive side, but at wing back, I think he would be pretty impressive. Paul Areola is out, which is huge in the attack. A lot of people have him pegged as a wing back competing with Julian Gressel, but I think that he probably pushes Jamil Assad to the bench. His direct running and his work rate are just unmatched on this team. And so having them be able to, or having him on the field to push the back line back, to combine, to get wide, like to just show up everywhere, because he's an electron. He pops up and you never know where it's going to be. Having him back will be huge. And he's close, but one of the mitigating factors here is that Hernan Losada is not bringing guys back until they are fully back. He's not bringing anybody back at 80% to let them work up and get a few minutes here and there. He views his system as so demanding on players for every minute they're on the field that that's too high of a risk of re-injuring them. And so players who would normally be back in past years by now are not. And so that's making the injury list worse, or at least appear worse in the short term. I think the idea is that then we have them. Once they're back, they're back. On the front line, we're missing everyone not named Eric Sorga, basically. He is the only number nine on the team right now, and he's not really a traditional number nine. Ola Kamara is hurt. Nigel Roberto was hurt last week. He may be back this week. He's an import from the Bulgarian League who is scoring goals for fun. He's Dutch-born, eligible to represent Curaçao internationally as well. Russell Knauss also missed last week. That was pretty big, too.
Good Lord, do you have any players at this point? That's like, we buried the lead here. This is awful for you guys.
Yeah, I'm leaving some guys off, I'm sure, too. The list was incredible. I think a lot of people think that it's down to Losada's training methods. I'm not convinced that's the case, because there are not that many muscle injuries in this that did not predate his arrival. Or predate
just bad luck. Sometimes it's just bad luck.
It's bad luck. I mean, it goes back to last year. Injuries were one of the stories of 2022. And a lot of these, Bill Hamid, Steven Birnbaum, they go back to 2020. Some of them was a preseason game where Griffin Yao got stepped on and hasn't been back on the field since. Paul Areola got injured playing for Swansea. So it's a lot of bad luck. And then I think Losada trying to mitigate any downstream consequences by getting them fully healthy now before he integrates them in.
So
go
ahead.
Oh, well, the Areola one I thought was just, unfortunate when you send a guy on loan like that and it, comes back to bite you. I was talking to a friend about whether or not it would be worth doing that for players literally the day he got hurt, which was interesting. But the last thing I wanted to ask you about, and you mentioned him, is Ola Kamara. And he was a big fan favorite when he was here, hasn't had the same level of success. Didn't have it out in LA. You have seen him more closely in DC. Why hasn't it worked, do you think? And obviously new manager, and I know he hasn't played much yet, but why during his time in DC, do you think he hasn't been able to find that form he had in Columbus?
So when he arrived at the end of 2018 as kind of the Rooney replacement, right before Rooney had left, he didn't play much because he was just coming back and building up fitness, but he scored at the almost exactly the same rate, slightly higher per minute than he did in Columbus. And when he was in LA, he scored at that same rate. And then in 2020, it completely did not happen for him. I think that was down to the whole team. Everyone in DC played badly, and I'm not going to judge any player on that. And then he got hurt right before the first game this year. So it's unclear whether he would improve this team. I think part of it, DC United under Ben Olsen did not play a system that was designed to give a center forward tap-ins at the near post, basically. Like, that just wasn't what the system was designed to create, to the extent it was designed to create anything. This new system, I think, could work better. It's going to require a lot of running from him, and he's not a young guy anymore. He's not, over the hill or anything, but he's getting towards the end of his prime years. So he's going to have to do a lot of work, and I think Nigel Roberto is going to be coming for him. There was some reporting that Eric Sorga was actually ahead of him going into that week one game. But I think Kamara would he'd have at least 90 minutes under his belt through three games at this point, and we would have some knowledge. I don't know, though, because we couldn't see any preseason games. We don't know whether he was knocking on the door or combining well or what. A lot of DC United fans are very down on Ola Kamara. They did not like what they saw from him in 2020, and he's been one of the kind of scapegoats for a lot of fans. I don't buy that at this point. I'm not willing to make that conclusion yet. I want to see some more from him this year, but I think, you know, as with everything with DC this year, we have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. So, Adam, we're never going to get a player here in Columbus like Wayne Rooney. Those guys just don't come here. What was that like? Because I, two seasons ago, I went and I just focused on Wayne Rooney, and I know that he was a shadow of what he used to be as an older player. But the one thing that he could do is just laser dead balls, and he scored on a restart. He dropped a corner exactly where it needed to be, and it was just sublime. And I go, I'm really glad I'm here to see this. So he's such a legend. Do you have any Wayne Rooney memories or any overarching feelings about his time with the club?
I mean, my biggest memory is just him combining with Luciano Acosta and finding a way to unlock Lucho. That Lucho had been fun up to that point, but he didn't produce at the level that it was clear he could. And then Rooney came, and the two of them just, they saw soccer exactly the same way, and they understood each other from the jump, and just, they played lights out. And Rooney got Lucho to start taking more shots instead of trying to lay off the ball for an assist every time. He's like, you should score goals too. You can do that. You're allowed. And it made that, and he made the whole team better. And that was one of the ways he did. And he wasn't just this legend who was here. He wasn't, Steven Gerrard in LA. He wasn't just here to cash a paycheck and enjoy the lifestyle. He came because he wanted to play, and he wasn't playing the way, he wasn't being played the way he wanted to at Everton. So he came here and immediately got the armband and became a day in, day out starter for as long as he had the legs. And even late in games, we saw he had the legs when he ran down Will Johnson and put up the assist of ever for MLS, I think.
Yeah, well, that had to be a lot of fun. I just have always been a fan of his. I wasn't too excited that you guys got him, but I knew we never were. So, you know, as just a fan of the game, I enjoyed watching him when I had a chance to do it. And in person, I'm like, you know, I'm really lucky to be here because this is it. I mean, he's going to go away soon. And that was my last opportunity. And a lot of these guys, you know, it seems like over the years, they would skip the trip to Columbus. They would always, oh, he's, you know, load management, or, you know, he's got a tweaked hamstring or whatever. And these superstars of the international game would somehow skip Columbus. And I appreciated that he came here and played. It was fun to watch. Let's go around the room as we do, Adam, and pick the game Saturday at 1:30 here in Columbus. And I'm going to save you for last, Adam. I'm going to have Bart go just before you because he always makes the most ridiculous pick. So we're going to start with the sober people in the room with Ori. What do you think?
Yeah, very sober right now, of course, as always. I did want to point out two classic Columbus Crew DC games as I'm looking at FUTBOBS head-to-head. October 2015 at Mobfrey Stadium, Crew won 5-0. Two goals from Finley, Jack McInerney scored, Aaron Schoenfeld even got a goal. And then we can't forget the 2018 playoff game at Audi Field, the penalty shootout. Pipa Higuain.
I can forget that.
You can forget that.
I would like to.
As any neutral or Crew fan will not forget that. I mean, that was a ridiculous, ridiculous game. But in terms of my prediction for Saturday, I think this will be the game that the Crew get off the mark finally in MLS play. Still the only team without a goal and without conceding a goal in the league. I think what's going to help them for this game when it comes to lineup rotation, Lucas Del Rayan cannot play Wednesday against Monterrey. So he'll have a full week of rest going into the DC game. And I think his quality at home is going to help the Crew get themselves a 2-0 victory. I think the clean sheet streak in MLS play will extend. And I think Columbus is going to get the W.
All right, Murph.
Yeah, I'm really interested to watch how this game plays out. You know, Adam talked about the pressing, and obviously that's something we've talked about on here before with other teams. Monterey is doing that to the Crew to some effect early in the game, and I imagine they will on Wednesday. So that rotation that Ori talked about is going to be big. Who's out there? That's a good point, Ori, about Zellerion. I will say 1-0 Crew, but I am really interested to see if they can handle the press. You know, we've seen mixed results throughout, you know, whether it was Caleb Porter, Greg Berhalter, when they played Red Bulls or other teams that have tried it. So I'll be interested to see how they handle it, especially a team that's still learning how to do it.
All right. Well, I'm going to go now. And after talking to Adam and looking at this laundry list of injuries, I don't give you guys a chance in hell at this point, Adam. Nothing personal. You sound like a really nice guy. And we'll have to get together and have beers sometime. But I'm gonna say 4-0. I'm gonna go to the Bart world. So now Bart has to top that.
Yeah. I appreciate that there, Brian, because I thought you were gonna go 3-0. I was like, I can come in 1-0 with that one. I don't know if I will go quite as far as 5-0. But I do feel comfortable 4-0. I think Lucas Zellerion, I feel like the Lucas Zellerion brace is coming. I think he's going to do, I'd like to see him do some bandit mask celebrations in honor of the venerable RFK Stadium Raccoons that we so know and love. Of course, Josh Williams going to be getting in that rotation. And I think he's going to score a bicycle kick off the set piece there, the dagger to go up 4-0. And we'll get a Liam Frazier goal in there. That's right. Liam Frazier is going to make his debut. We'll talk about that a little bit later, folks. Wow. And he's going to pick one up.
there you go. Now you've kind of gone off the rails with that pick, but I like it. I don't know. Is he even going to play? I guess we'll explore that here in a few minutes. All right, Adam, are you going to stick up for your guys?
I would like to. I don't think it'll be 4-0. I'll say that much. DC United hasn't given up many big chances outside of transition moments. The press will be better than it was against the chaos that is San Jose. I think they'll get a goal off of that. So I think United gets on the board, but I think Columbus probably gets a couple. So 2-1 to you guys to gloat over us until August.
All right. Well, we won't tell anyone that you said that. We'll protect your identity and your pick. Well, Adam, it's been a pleasure. You know your stuff, and enjoy your season. I think it's going to be an interesting ride based on what you told us. And I feel like by the end of the season, you're going to be happier than you are now, because there's just lots to do and lots of injured players. So it's going to be a ride where if you can just get in the playoffs, who knows? You can get hot at the end. You never know. So we could see in the playoffs, which would be fun. Classic MLS. Nothing wrong with that. Got all these new teams. It's like 30, 50 of them now. I can't even keep track. I remember when there were 10, and it was good enough. I was at that first game at Ohio Stadium, which I believe was what was the final score of that game, Bart? Was it 4-0 or 4-1? It's been a long day. It's been 25 years. Somebody look that up.
I wasn't born yet.
Yeah, you weren't born yet, Adam.
Well, that's not one of the top games at Crew Stadium.
You're probably in the third grade.
Sixth grade, thank you.
Okay. I'll tell you this. Playing on that football field at Ohio Stadium was goofy. It was like Yankee Stadium. It was a postage stamp. It wasn't great for the beautiful game. I'm glad we got our own digs. We'll be closing that soon. And DC United's final visit to Classic Crew Stadium this coming Saturday at 1:30. Adam, thank you so much. Let's do it again when we meet again in August. I would enjoy that.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks, Adam.
Appreciate it, Adam.
My pleasure. Yep. See you guys later.
All right, that's Adam Taylor from The Filibuster, which is a great name for a DC United-related podcast. And he obviously knows his stuff. I enjoyed that. That was very interesting. All right, let's talk about – we'll get to the Champions League here in a minute, because it's not going to take us long to dispatch this 0-0 draw down in Fort Lauderdale against I did that on the air this morning. I said Miami. It was Montreal. It's very confusing. There were no supporters there. It was hotter than all get out. Day games shouldn't be played in that part of the country, but You know, I mean, it is what it is. Montreal has to fit into other people's schedules. I thought Booba played well, and I thought Eloy Room obviously played well and saved our bacon in that game. Pat, what did Caleb Porter say after?
Yeah, he was not the happiest of campers after the game. Felt that by rotating guys that they would have in fresh legs, have more energy to create more than they did in that game. In the heat, he certainly was willing to admit that played a part. Didn't want to use that as an excuse, though he did tell us that he had sweated through his shirt, which was a nice little tidbit of information.
Thank you for that.
He was wearing long sleeves. What was he doing?
He was. When I saw a shot of him at the beginning of the match, before I knew what the temperature was, I thought, oh, well, great. It's an unusually cool day in South Florida. That's good for us.
Yeah, that was not the case. I think, he summed it up pretty well, that they just didn't have the offensive energy that you hoped for, didn't create a ton. There was probably the chance that stands out to me, and it doesn't even technically count, was the Bradley Wright Phillips one that he does finish a nice play. Matan, you see that he has that creative ability, but it was just a split second late. If he gets his footing right, a little bit earlier, I think you get a goal there. So it's one of those games where it just didn't have a ton to talk about. And I think you're okay coming home with the draw. I also think from a little bit bigger picture, and I asked Caleb about this, was, you've played two games, you're in the Champions League, you've still got a shot at that, obviously, going down to Mexico. You look at some of the other teams in the league that are playing in Champions League right now, and even historically, that you could be a lot worse than 0-2 and not having given up a goal. 0-2, I guess. So, 2 points out of the first two games while still battling Champions League, I think, is okay. You would have liked to get out of there with a win. I didn't think Montreal ever looked too dangerous, but I think you kind of take what you got there.
Yeah, Ori, I felt like Montreal came out with purpose, and they owned the possession 56-44 overall in the game. And I felt like they had a plan that they just didn't quite execute. And when the game was over, I'm like, is Montreal good or not? And I'm just not really sure at this point. What's your impression of them?
I think it's tough to tell right now. I mean, I think the conditions were a huge factor. I think Caleb Porter wanted his guys to play sort of the regular way that he was expecting them to. But I think that he played a role, and certainly did, because he was mentioning it at halftime. He mentioned it after the game. And he said, these guys are human. And I remember in high school, my experiences playing in extreme heat, whether it was soccer, wearing catcher's gear for baseball in 95 degree weather in Columbus and getting a heat stroke. It's really, really hard to play in those kind of conditions, especially when you're running around the field for 80, 90 plus minutes. But I think this game proved, defensively, Columbus is an elite team. I think now with Vito Warmhoor finally back into the rotation,
That was great to see.
Yeah, and he had a good game. You saw him in good positions. You saw him get after tackles, good distribution of the ball as well. He was 100% pass accuracy in that game. So having that center back rotation now helps too. You saw Saad Abdul-Salam play. You saw Waylon Francis get a full 90 minutes in that one with Valenzuela resting for the game on Wednesday. So defensively, these guys are very good. This is an elite defensive team, and we kind of knew that, whereas offensively, it's been taking a little more time for these guys to really gel in MLS play. They've scored, one goal, they scored one goal against Esteli. They've scored what? I want to say 7 goals in Champions League total, and then none in league play thus far to start the year. But again, like what Pat said, results wise for a Champions League MLS team having to juggle with these two games a week thing, 2 draws, 2 points, not the worst thing in the world. You look at the results on Saturday for the other Champions League teams that played. Toronto had a bye. Atlanta lost to New England after getting destroyed by Philly on last Tuesday. Philly lost to New York City. It's their second straight loss in the league. And then Portland got obliterated by Dallas 4-1. So those guys haven't been able to juggle it as well. And I think that comes with the fact that Portland and Atlanta defensively aren't as good as Columbus. Philadelphia is very good too, but they just haven't been able to find their footing in home matches. So defensively, this team is excellent. Offense is going to take time for these guys to gel.
All right, Bart, you saw the game. What'd you think?
I think, again, it looked like, you know, two teams playing in Fort Lauderdale at the hottest time of the day. I think the things that, you know, kind of concern me, obviously the conditions, those aren't great, but, you know, these are professionals. They've been there. I thought some of the, you know, some of the decisions, you know, we knew we were going to have rotation. I was a bit curious to see Pedro Santos get the entire run out, because you'd think, or at least my first instinct would be, you know, knowing that you don't have Lucas Zelarayán for that second leg against Monterrey, and knowing how much success you've had plugging Pedro Santos into that 10 role, that you'd see him come off early so you could give him, you know, feel comfortable about running him 90 minutes on Wednesday night. Now, maybe that is, you know, says more about what Caleb Porter thinks about Sanchez's fitness, that he can go out there and do that. And that may be the case. I was encouraged. I thought, you know, Waylon Francis put in, you know, a pretty good performance, all things considered. And I think, you know, that is, it looks like he had the highest rating outside of Aloy Room on who scored for Crew. And I think that's a good sign, as Milton Valenzuela. We know he has some injury history, and we know Waylon's got him too. And so if he can get back on the track, and I was pretty impressed as well with Saad Abdul Salam coming on. It is wild to see how speedy he is at 6'4", covering ground on the outside.
He's huge. And that was the thing that really shocked me. I'm like, is he really, he looks taller than everyone else out of the field, and he does run really well. I think that's an interesting weapon to have. And in that position, most clubs don't. I mean, he's a foot taller than Matan. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's an interesting weapon to have in that position, I think, with that body type and that speed. I think he's going to be a difference maker in some of these matches coming up where we're going to need that depth. And we hadn't even really been thinking about him at all. Did Caleb talk about him at all after the game?
Not after the game. He has talked about him since he came. You know, a guy who he's worked with before, obviously, at Akron for 1 year. So, Abdul Salam walked on there. So they've got a relationship there. You know, a lot of the post game was about Vito and then about the, you know, kind of the lack of energy. Things like that. But I will say Caleb has talked recently about wanting to have 4, 5, 6 guys that he can roll with, is the way he puts it. Guys that, you know, can play 2, 3 games in a week and you're not too concerned. And I think, to Bart's point, I think Pedro is one of those guys that he's started to trust. You know, obviously you know, Pedro's on the ground a lot, but rarely does he have to come out of a game or miss time with a real injury. You know, he's shown in the past, and this even goes back multiple years, that when you have those 3 and 8 day windows, and you know, usually those were rare. Recently, they've been, you know, a weekly thing. But he's a guy who's been able to play, you know, 2 games in short succession. So I'll be interested to see kind of what this lineup looks like, because I think it'll tell us about some of the other guys that he knows he can trust. I think Josh Williams is a guy who can, you know, can kind of roll through, and he obviously came on in the second half. You know, I think Giassi Zardes is normally one of those guys. Caleb did tell us he's dealing with a shoulder injury after that collision that Caleb thought should have been a penalty kick on Wednesday against Monterrey. I would be surprised if he's not back for the Monterrey game. It didn't sound overly serious, but we'll talk to the team tomorrow. But yeah, so I'll just be interested to see, especially with more match congestion throughout the year, who are the guys that he trusts to play, you know, either 2 or 3 of those games consecutively.
And I think one other just encouraging, although, you know, it's now 2 goals, I think, that he's had disallowed, but BWP, especially his touch in the box, you know, all due respect to Giassi Zardes, but you look at how composed he is in there, his runs, the way he's just able to control and distribute in the box with such comfort and such precision. I think it is going to be great, and great as well for a young guy like Miguel Berry. But I think even Giassi Zardes is going to learn a little bit just playing around BWP, the level of professional that he is. And again, just his composure. That's what's impressed me the most. And a nice pass and a great ball there from Alex Matan. Again, just a little bit off, but a good thought and great placement.
Yeah, I mean, after talking this through with you guys, not that I was panicked about the result. I was just kind of down about it. But when you look at the overall picture, the other teams that are playing in the Champions League, it ain't so bad. And we got a long road to go. And putting points in the bank at both of these MLS games, not conceding, it's a beautiful thing. And it's a nice little foundation. And onward and upward to D.C. All right, we've saved the best for last. It was everything that I hoped it would be from an entertainment standpoint. Should we talk about the officiating first and get that out of the way and sort of divide up what is warranted to complain about and what we're overreacting to? We all saw and heard Caleb Porter's comments after the match. Obviously, he was not happy. And none of us were. But Murph, I feel like you're sort of you could see the forest for the trees when it comes to things like this. Was the officiating as bad as we're seeing through our gold colored glasses, so to speak, or are we being unfair? Am I missing something here?
No, it was bad. It was very bad.
That's what I thought.
And yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, even from a neutral perspective, from a crew perspective, I think that it was inconsistent. You know, if you're going to give a yellow card to Lucas De La Rayon early, and, you know, Bart and I have talked about this outside the show, you know, you set a precedent there, okay? You're not taking anything, right? And then you don't follow through with that. You give two yellow cards the rest of the game, and it's for dissent and, you know, guys coming face-to-face. You know, I think it was 19 fouls on Monterey. And, you know, when you get into that high number, regardless of what the foul is, you've got to eventually start giving out cards. The VAR, which was thrown together last minute, and Caleb Porter made his thoughts on that very clear for two straight days. You know, it was very clear that that was going to be a disaster. It was just, you know, the term CONCACAF gets used a lot. And I think sometimes, to Brian, your point is that that does tend to be an American thing that we talk about. And, you know, there's probably people in other countries that think the officiating is just garbage in general too. But that game was about as good of an example of getting CONCACAF as you can get. I mean, you know, the reviews on the offside goal, you know, he might have been offside, but I couldn't tell that for sure from the angle. You know, I don't know if Giassi Zardes deserved a penalty kick. He did get a shot off, but, you know, at least there's questions there. And Caleb Porter pointed out one that I didn't even notice, and that's there was a potential handball that didn't get checked on the buildup for Monterey's equalizer. And it was hard to tell on TV if it actually hit the hand. They obviously didn't go back and review it, but, you know, yes, it was bad. And I'd be the first to tell you if, you know, I thought that there were overreactions or whatnot, but no, it was as bad as I've seen a CONCACAF game in a while.
Well, I don't think there's anything is more appalling though than the tackle on Darlington Nagbe. I mean, to horse collar tackle,
yeah,
and also stomp his ligament there. I mean, studs up that is two red cards that you get on one play, and just I don't even think there's a foul. I mean, it is appalling.
Well, it's also weird because to your point, Murph, there were 19 fouls called on Monterey to 6 on Columbus. I don't think I've ever seen a match with so many fouls called that didn't serve the overall purpose of the game, because that's what fouls are supposed to be, right? They're supposed to be tools for the official to police the game so that the players don't kill each other. Okay. So you call all these fouls, but none of the calls do anything to let Monterey know that they need to back off this sort of play. And so, of course, they're going to keep going and keep pushing the envelope, and they were never punished for that. So it's, you know, I've been joking. It's like, well, let's play leg two with no officials and see how that goes, because he didn't accomplish anything. And I don't know if we're going to have the same crew or not. I don't know. Is it incompetence? Is there something dark that I'm missing here? I don't want to be conspiratorial, but what are we missing? Why is this officiating so piss poor in this competition? Because it's not just us. We see it over and over and over again, to the point where it's like, what are we even doing here? Why are we playing in this competition? You want a rough spirited game, that's fine. But the official has to be has to show some wisdom and some judgment. And I saw none of that. The yellow card in Lucas was a complete phantom, was it not? He didn't touch the guy, you know?
He may have gotten it, but it was definitely, you know, I can see calling a foul there just because if he steps on the guy's foot, he steps on the guy's foot. But, you know, clearly he was just turning and changing direction. You know, that was one of the stranger ones I've ever seen. And Brian, you basically summed up what Caleb said the next day. You know, the night of the game, he went on his rant for about 4.5 minutes, didn't take questions, and then apologized to us the next day. He just said, you know, he was so frustrated. He just didn't have anything more to say. But he said the same thing. Why, you know, why were we playing in these games? These big, you know, we want to make this Champions League a big, meaningful thing. The Crew want to go out and win this thing. You know, what's the point if you're going to have officiating like that? And, you know, it's hard to disagree with him. And like you said, Brian, it's not just the Crew. It, you know, there are other, we talked a couple weeks ago about in the Philadelphia game, in their Champions League game, and the lack of the red cards in that. And obviously they didn't have VAR. And for those who aren't clear on what happened with the VAR, because it was kind of, it wasn't really covered very well in the buildup to the game. I guess there has to be, you have to have some sort of credentialing or something to, in order to have VAR in a competition or a league. And they just got that approval last week. And so the original plan was to introduce VAR by the semifinals. They got it before the quarterfinals. So they decided to do it very quickly. So for instance, Chris Penso, who was the VAR for that game, is an Ohio native. He's the closest guy who wasn't calling a game that, or officiating a game. So he was the guy they called. And, you know, so it was very last minute put together. He'd never worked with these other guys before, which may or may not be a bigger deal. I've never been a VAR before, but you can just see how last second it was and how troubling that is for what is a quarterfinal in allegedly the biggest tournament in your region for club teams. So, yeah, I mean, ultimately, did it cost the Crew? I don't know. I think we'll see. You know, what it means to not have Lucas Zelleray on. I do think the Crew need, and this isn't anything to do with the refereeing, but they need to play the mind games better than they did in that first game. And, you know, if the example I use, and Ori and I talked about this after the game, there was one play in the first half when Harrison Offal got fouled. Foul was called, and the Monterey player stood over him, you know, in kind of that basketball intimidating way that you saw a lot in the like 80s and 90s. And no one came over to defend Harry, and, you know, Harry didn't react or anything. And I don't think you need to do anything stupid to get a yellow card there, but, you know, go and let the guy know that's not okay. And, you know, you've got to play. And this is something that the U.S. national team had to learn for a long time in order to compete with Mexico, because that's just the way they play. And, you know, there's going to be hard tackles and there's going to be some intimidation. And, you know, especially if you're a team that on paper probably isn't, you know, an equal level just based on what Monterey spends, like we talked about last week. You've got to come with that kind of mental fight. And I think the Crew picked it up throughout the game, but I think they need to have it from the opening whistle this week.
I felt like we were playing the uniform for the first 30 minutes and we were like all wide-eyed and we're playing like it. And then, bam, we snapped into form and then – there was no time added in the first half, which was kind of bizarre, you know? And of course we get 4 minutes at the end of, maybe he was just saving it all for the end of the match. I don't know, but it was super weird. They're just like 1 minute of stoppage time. Like what? Huh? Come on. You know, Bart, you have more questions about the VAR.
Well, I mean, now and this is just maybe order of operations clarification for me. So is it, can any of the officials on the field call for VAR, or does it have to be the lead official? Can the VAR official himself call down and say, hey, you need to review this one?
Well, guess what? That's one of the problems with it, is it? So I believe the current protocol is that the head official, basically, you, whenever you see the VAR, you can see the head official like touching his ear, listening to the guy like, oh, do I have to review something? And then you see the players running towards him like, dude, you know, what is this? And then you just back off. You know, I'm gesturing. You guys can't see it on the podcast when the refs do their gestures in the air. But it's too inconsistent. And it's a shame that in the 2 or 3 years that VAR has existed, it's the headline of games where it affects results. And one thing Caleb, and I asked Caleb Porter about VAR after the game, I basically asked him, what did you envision VAR would be? And is this what you, and is what you envisioned happening right now? And he basically said no, because you're talking about millimeters you're calling right now. This is not stuff that's clear and obvious. This is stuff that only a VAR official, that is probably the one that's initiating most of the VARs, because the linesmen, lineswomen, whoever's out there, the head official, fourth official, usually are pretty confident in their decision. But then it's basically the VAR person, and Caleb said this, he is the one that's calling the game. And Caleb Porter essentially said that day on Thursday, we looked at the free kick goal. They couldn't physically stop the frames of the video when Lucas made contact with the ball. Because when you see the replay of the free kick goal, when Lucas is kicking it towards Josh Williams at the far post, the ball is slightly off his foot. But we're talking millimeters, people. This is stuff that is not discernible to the naked eye. And even if that frame is where you're calling Josh Williams offside on, he's offside by maybe an inch of his shoulder blade, which no self-respecting human being can call that as offside. And VAR has shown that a lot of the rules of the game are not objective, they're subjective. And there might need to be clarification on offside rule, red card, fouls, and all the stuff that is, and I've said this a million times, all the stuff that's like, guess what? The ball went out off of this guy. It's a corner, not a goal kick. They don't review that. Like, what the hell?
And I saw several of those. Like, why are they getting the throw in? But it's like, Murph, it's like the bottom line with this crap is that for the entire history of the beautiful game, we've understood what offsides is. And now it's like the Zapruder film or something. It's like, what are they looking at? It's like, it's so infinitesimal, and they're just breaking it down frame by frame by frame. And that was, you know, I'd like to think that we sort of, at the end of the day, we err on the side of the attacking player and give them the benefit of the doubt. If, you know, one finger is past the defender, that's now offsides. And that's not the way it's been forever. And it ruins the game. So many lovely plays, so many great goals have been squashed over the last couple of years because we're dealing with just frames of video. And it's ridiculous, and it's a waste of time.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of VAR, if we remember, you know, we've had review in other sports, and the whole point of this was to kind of get rid of these issues, right? To make it when it was, okay, this clearly shouldn't have been a goal, or, you know, go to the MLS Cup in 2015. The ball's clearly out of bounds. Okay, we're calling that back. And the whole point was that the referees on the field would have somebody watching up in the box, has a better view and has camera angles, and it was going to be done quickly. And if he needed to come over because they wanted the center ref to still be the one calling the game, to Caleb Porter's point, that he could come over and look at it. And what it has become is different leagues have different rules in how they do it. And the English Premier League is probably what has caused the biggest issues, because they're drawing lines for offside and going down to your point, the millimeters, the finest inches. And now they've had to re-rule the offside rule to describe, okay, well, if it's a part of your body you can score with, now that's okay to be off, that can't be offside. But if it's your hand, well, then you can't score with your hand. So that, you know, and so we've rewritten rules to make VAR work as opposed to fitting VAR into what it was supposed to be within the rules. And, you know, especially when you throw it together like this, where these referees have never done it before, or at least not at this level, you're going to have issues. And they did. And, you know, it may have cost the crew a goal.
I have scored a lot.
Go ahead. Art.
I did just want to say, you know, I've scored so many goals with my knee hair back in the day, because that really is going to make a difference when I'm running down the line to, you know, shoot the ball in. So, like, when I listened to what Caleb Porter said, you know, obviously it was just interesting to hear a head coach of an MLS team's perspective, but just also as a fan of the sport, this is the sport that I love the most. It's sad to see what it's turned into and the inconsistencies of it. But outside of the officiating and whatnot of that Monterey Crew game, I think we can all agree that that second half was incredibly exciting, end-to-end drama. There was controversy mixed in as well. It was a great game to watch, just from a perspective of entertainment.
You know, and to your point, Ori, and maybe this is wisdom and maturity. You know, as a younger man, I would have left just fuming mad about what we've just talked about. And I left exhausted and excited. And that was one of the best games I've ever seen in that stadium. It took a little while to get going. But once we found our legs in this game, we took it to them and we were the better team. And the result was very disappointing. It's probably going to cost the Crew a chance to advance. But just as a match, it was compelling drama, wasn't it, Bart?
Oh, absolutely. And again, just, you know, for maybe how frustrating he might have been on Saturday, it just, Lucas Zelarayán is one of the, probably the most dominant big game performer that has ever worn the black and gold. When you just look in the games when they matter, I mean, he took that game over. You know, it was something that was special for him as a former Tigres player who played so many matches against Monterrey and the just hateful rivals that they are. But I mean, this was a Crew team that absolutely dominated Monterrey outside of, you know, and I was late getting into the game because of some, it looked like PSV, you know, came in to help manage some of the gates for that one. but missed kind of the initial goal. But from that point on, once we were in and settled, I mean, Crew, they're able to respond. You get, BWP, and I'd argue that should have been a goal, but I mean, to have him be able to come on and respond, albeit in vain, you look at just the performances you got from other players, and I felt really encouraged. And honestly, you know, if you're Monterrey, you just have to be absolutely thrilled with that result, because you should be probably heading home down 3-1, thinking that you need to really take care of business to go in, and instead they find themselves, you know, I wouldn't say in the driver's seat, because you still have to look at the form and what you've been able to see from, you know, the amount of time that, from that first leg, and Crew dominated it. And I think when the, you know, one of the questions we had and we were talking about last week was, you know, what about the golfing class or the perceived golfing class between these teams, between Monterrey, that's got all the money, that's got the former Tottenham players, and Columbus looked, outside of that first early goal, once they got their feet under them, they looked every bit, if not better, than Monterrey. And I think that that says a lot for what Caleb Porter is building. And hopefully we will not be seeing the last of them, at least in this competition, come Wednesday.
Yeah.
Murph, I was talking to Neil Sika last week on the radio show about Monterrey. They didn't bring all their weapons with them on Wednesday. The man they called the Dutch Bull was not here. They've struggled with their form down the stretch as they look ahead to the postseason in Liga MX. Do you have a sense of what weapons they will have available to them on Wednesday night that they didn't have last Wednesday?
I haven't heard anything, and Ori, you...
Oh, we lost you, Murph.
I think Murph's AirPods just died on him, potentially.
All right. Well, you pick it up. Pick up that point. Ha-ha,
it wasn't me this time.
It wasn't you.
All right. Pick up that point. They didn't bring everybody with them. What do you have any sense of what they plan to do lineup-wise that they didn't do last Wednesday?
Yeah, I mean, essentially the two main players that were out for the game in Columbus were Vincent Janssen, the former Tottenham striker, and then Max Meza, one of their creative attacking players. They didn't make the trip to Ohio. They will definitely be available for Monterrey on Wednesday. And they just beat Mazatlan in their final Liga MX game. They finished fourth place. So they actually got lucky, because if they didn't finish in fourth and they finished fifth or sixth, then they would have had another game this weekend to worry about outside of Columbus. Oh. Whereas this time around, they play Columbus and then they have a midweek game for their first League MX playoff match. So they get a full week of rest after this. So they're going to go full guns blazing for this game. They don't have to worry about rotation at all. But this is going to be a tough, tough match. This is going to be a hostile environment. Luckily, you're not dealing with the same kind of altitude as you are at Azteca, but I believe the altitude in Monterrey, which is in Guadalupe and Nuevo León, is a little under 2,000 feet above sea level. I'm not sure, though. I have to double check. It's not Azteca level, but there's still going to be some altitude. It's going to be hot. It's on Cinco de Mayo, which is interesting. But in general, Monterrey is going to be out there. The fans, the players, it's going to be hostile. And you could see, you know, their tactic in those first couple of 15 minutes. They were going after Zelarayán. They were going to make sure that he got a second yellow. He wasn't going to play in the game in Mexico. You saw when he made the foul in quotations. You know, he did make contact, but it was in the midst of a dribbling move. So I didn't think it was a foul. Definitely not worthy of a yellow. But you could see they were hounding the ref. They were making sure that he got carded. And then in general, after they scored, Javier Aguirre is like, sit back, counter. You know, they were confident enough. And based on Aguirre's answers in press conferences, you could see that this guy is confident in his team. And he doesn't look too kindly on MLS clubs in general or on this competition. You know, he's talked about how Monterrey, you know, playing in Copa America kind of thing. And just in general, how MLS is not at their level. So he probably was like, all right, they scored. Let's just sit back. They can't do anything maybe against us. Maybe that was his mindset. I don't know. But it seemed that way just based on the tactics. And guess what? Columbus punched him in the throat and just created chance after chance. And I think they'll be able to do it. And I would expect Pedro Santos to start in that number 10 role in replacement of Zelarayán. And you're probably looking at Diaz on the right. And then on the left, probably Etienne. I don't think Alex Matan is quite ready for a 60-minute start. He might come off the bench as an impact sub. And then Zarda should probably be back. Caleb Porter did say on Saturday that he popped his shoulder on the collision with the keeper in the Monterrey game, which Caleb Porter said that that should have been a penalty. And if Zardes doesn't jump, he breaks his leg. So got lucky out of that. Just want to make sure that Pat, is your mic working again?
Testing. 1, 2. Murph?
Yeah, I'm not sure what was happening there.
Huh, that was weird.
So I couldn't hear you guys either. So I don't know.
Well, it's got to be headphones. Yeah, it's just one of those things. And that's why we'll be at Saucy all together here in the next few weeks. You know, Murph, I feel like we were talking about what Monterrey might do differently lineup-wise. I have a feeling that because of those two important players are probably going to be in the starting 11, I feel like that they have a whole other gear prepared for us. I feel like we didn't see their full arsenal of tricks on Wednesday here in Columbus. And my concern is that they could swamp us right from the jump and make it a foregone conclusion in the first half hour. So obviously the Crew have to be ready to play and not be intimidated. And one of the ways they cannot be intimidated or perhaps reduce the intimidation factor is the amount of supporters that will be allowed in this big stadium in Monterrey. Well, has anyone revealed what their cap will be for this game?
I think they were at like 20-30% as of last week. I believe either I read that somewhere or Eddie, who we had on last week, may have said that. I know they are not anywhere near full capacity, but I haven't seen anything this week updating that. So, you know, there'll be fans, I believe, at the game, but it won't be anywhere near, you know, what you would expect in a normal trip, which is good news for the Crew in terms of the atmosphere. But, you know, from a neutral perspective, it would be cool to see, you know, that type of thing. I hope obviously we get more opportunities to have games in these type of environments.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't even know how to pick a score on this because I feel like I'm of two minds in this game. So I'm going to wait for a moment. Murph, do you have a score?
Yeah, I'm going to say 2-1 Monterrey. I do think that the Crew, you know, I was impressed with what they did last week. But as we just touched upon, this wasn't a full go attack from Monterrey. I think the first 15-20 minutes are going to be huge. You know, if you can keep Monterey off the board, in fact, the longer you can keep Monterey off the board, obviously the Crew has to score a goal, and I believe they will be aggressive. But, you know, I think they, like Ori said, I think they expect to kind of come into their own home and handle the Crew. And I think if you're frustrating them, then maybe that can play into your advantage a little bit. But I do think the Crew are just a little bit overmatched in this one, especially without Lucas El Rayan. That's a killer when you need to score a goal. Maybe if you had a 2-1 lead, you could play a little bit more defensive. But, you know, I just think he showed what a big game player he is, and you're going to really miss that. So I say, unfortunately, the Crew do not make it through after losing 2-1.
All right, Ori?
I wrote down the same score before Pat said it. I say 2-1 Monterey, and then you guys should double check on the Massive Report Twitter. We did tweet out the scenario guide. I made the graphic for that. So if the game ends 0-0, Monterey would advance on that literally last second goal that they scored in Columbus on away goals. So the Crew has to score. Game only goes to penalties if it's a 2-2 draw. But I think Monterey will be able to get the win. I think playing in Mexico, I mean, let's face it, most of the guys on this Columbus Crew roster, a lot of them just don't have that kind of big game experience, especially going to hostile territory like Monterey. They showed great character. They played very, very well against them in Columbus. But I think this is a whole nother animal going all the way down to Mexico and playing in an environment like that against a team this good. And I think we're going to see the other MLS teams struggle when they go down there to Toronto FC at Cruz Azul, and then the Portland Timbers going to play at Club America, while Philly will coast their way to the semifinal in the all MLS match. But I also think that you saw Lucas El Rayan make the impact as the guy that has played Monterrey so many times before with Tigres, and you don't have him as one of the few guys that played in Mexico for so many years, knows what to expect in the environment, knows what to expect for the game plan, especially when they're at home in terms of Monterrey being at home. But I think Rayados are going to advance, make the semifinals, and the Columbus Crew will shift their focus into MLS play for the remainder of 2021.
Bart, can you counter that? Can you give us a scenario that sees us coming home advancing?
I do see one, and I see that as a 2-2 game at the end of regulation.
Uh-huh.
It's going to penalties.
Oh, boy.
And it's going all the way. And Aloy Room going 1v1 versus the keeper with a Paneka to clinch it and send Columbus into the semis.
We need to have a compilation of the amount of insane picks that Bart makes on this show and just play it for 1 week. We just don't record a podcast and we just play Bart Logan predictions, and essentially all of them are going to consist of Josh Williams scores a bicycle kick.
Just do it at the end of the season, and then just, like, you know, do it like prediction. Here's with Bart. Reality 2-1.
It'd be a pretty bad reality if we're listening to that podcast. Say Columbus ties its next 32 MLS games 0-0, and you pick a Josh Williams bicycle kick every time. That podcast wouldn't go down too well.
But that one time that I do, no one's going to remember the other 30 times I picked him with a bicycle kick. They're only going to remember the time I correctly called it.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Might as well take them all.
And as I will point out, since joining this podcast, I have correctly predicted every single Columbus Crew win. Not necessarily the score, but correctly predicted the win.
Wow. So impressive.
This is your longest odds prediction, I think. I don't even know how to top that, so I'm just not going to make a pick. How about that? I'm going to weenie out. I'm just going to watch the game, hope for the best, and hope that we don't leave Monterey with a bunch of injuries. Because here's the other wild card is the officiating is probably going to be worse. You know, I mean, do you expect it to be better? I don't know who's in charge of the pool of officials or where they're finding these people. Is it a temp agency? I don't know. Where do these guys, like the Crew we had last week, what kind of games, what leagues would they work in if they weren't doing that
game? Well, does
anyone know?
I think the officiating crew for the game on Wednesday, it was two Costa Rican officials, and I think it was two guys from Honduras. So My expectation would be is that they've worked a couple of CONCACAF league games within their league. But again, it's, you know, But here's the thing. People will say that, oh, these refs don't have big game experience. The rules are the same in every single game of soccer all over the world. Every referee should conduct themselves and know every single rule in the rule book and be able to officiate a game at any level as well as they can. Yes, people are human and make mistakes, but you know, officiating is all about being able to, you know, keep things fair for both teams and keeping yourself consistent in the calls that didn't happen last Wednesday. So, you know, as much as people want to say, oh, these guys probably, you know, they're not reffing in big leagues, so they're probably not good refs. The guy that reffed this game on Wednesday is probably one of the better officials in Costa Rica. It might say something just about how many people are trying to be officials or just the way that officials are in those countries. But, you know, in general, officials all over the world, you've seen with VAR, you know, a lot of them don't know, you know, to the T every single rule or just in general games that are just not called perfectly. But I think that's been the case with sports for so long.
Well, Ari, I think it was your point earlier that needs to be emphasized is that Monterrey play the head game better than anyone else we're going to play this year in MLS. And they got in the official's head and intimidated him. And, you know, he was handing out fouls, as I said, right and left, but none of them had any impact on cracking down on the rough play.
Yeah.
And my fear is we're going to come home with another player or two injured because the referees aren't willing to say now enough, you get a card. You've been chopping down trees all night and I've seen enough. And that's what we ask of the officials. It's like, you could see in every game, it's like, okay, you get one more and then I'm going to card you. So knock it off. And we never saw that. We saw fouls willy nilly, but it's like raising children and not, okay, I'm going to put you in timeout. If you do it again, and then you never follow through. So I hope the game isn't ruined, but that game was so great that even with the lousy officiating, it was still compelling drama. And so I hope that at least we could get a great game out of this and a great experience. And we're not leaving going, oh, if only the officials would have been good. So we'll see. I'm not optimistic about the officiating. Guys, real quick, Liam Fraser on loan from Toronto. What do we expect him to do, if anything? Obviously, he's probably got a quarantine for a while, but long-term, what does he add?
Yeah, I mean, more or less, this is a move to, supplement the roster with Aiden Morris going down for the year. And I know there's been a lot of talk about would they bring back Sebastian Berhalter. And I think that the thinking there is that they know that Sebastian Berhalter is going to get a good amount of minutes in Austin. He's basically the number two, on the depth chart. So anytime they need to rotate, he's going to play. Whereas with the Crew, he may even be behind, you know,
Barry Kitchen and maybe
Parente. Yeah. Maybe even.
Yes. And that's the other thing is they're very high on Isaiah Parente. And in this in no way means that, you know, they aren't as high on him. He's a guy who can play a handful of different positions. So this just adds another midfielder and frankly, a guy who's played in MLS, a young kid. He's played with the youth Canadian national team.
Senior too.
Yeah. He's made a couple appearances with the senior team. So, you know, you're getting a pretty good player here who Toronto are very high on and just don't have room for him right now. So, you know, I think it's an interesting move. At the very least, it's another depth guy and maybe you find something in a guy who can help you out this year. But, you know, obviously Aiden Morris was supposed to be a factor.
Mm-hmm. And obviously we wish Aiden nothing but the best. Before we go, also there's the mystery of Jonathan. We haven't seen him the last two games. Is he hurt? What's going on?
Yeah, Caleb Porter said he had tight hamstring. They didn't want to risk him against Monterrey in that first leg and have it become, you know, a long-term thing. Saturday he said, you know, he was still dealing with it. I know it's been going around also that his wife finally made it to the United States after over a year. Due to a lot of different issues of trying to get here from Ghana. So, I think putting those two things together when we were talking about Saturday, leaving him at home probably was the smart thing. Mm-hmm. I would be very surprised if he's not, assuming no setback, not that they've had a lot of time to train since Saturday, because They had to fly down to Mexico, but I would assume that he's back in the lineup for that game unless anything changes.
Okay, good. That's good to hear. And the family aspect was one that I wasn't aware of. And I think that's great. They're giving him a little time to just kind of be with his wife that he's seen for a year. We've gone through so many unusual things that you don't think about. So that's good. All right.
Fun fact about his wife. Nordic fans asked her about, you know, where do you want to sit and watch games when you get the chance? And she said, I want my tickets in the naughty corner. And I think that's what we have to. That is
all right, the best. I love her. Better
oh, boy.
She's wonderful. She's boy.
We need to change the name to the naughty corner. The
naughty corner. You change it to the her first name is Kafui. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. So, or just call it the Mensa corner. How about that?
No, the naughty corner. It's great.
Naughty corner. The naughty corner.
Naughty Nordeca. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, we could cordon off a section of Nordeca and make it the naughty corner.
It's just where the G-bags are.
Oh, my God. That's beautiful. What a mix. I love that.
Imagine Jonathan Mensa's wife just yelling at the officials, just you know, all this stuff with a GCG bag and Nordeca around her and all this stuff.
And then we all say, no, that was me, sir. That was me. Mr. Referee, or take me out.
Bart, I'm putting you in charge of establishing the naughty corner in the new stadium.
We have to send this to
them. I want a TIFO. I want the whole thing. Okay. I mean, you know, you could have so much fun with that. So make it happen. I love it. All right. Well, we thank our friends at Saucy Brew Works. Ori, pull up that copy.
All right. We're bringing the copy back. I know Pat hates it, but we're going to read it again. Saucy Brew Works is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Saucy Brew Works. If your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? I don't have their phone number. I will bring that up for the next time I read the copy.
All right.
Or their address. You can look that up on 443 Google Maps or
Easter.
Saucy.
443 Easter.
Yeah, that's something like that. It's four something that's something East
Third Avenue. We can pull it up right now. We got the internet. West Third Avenue.
Third. 443 West Third.
That was really close.
And if you want more information, call 614-696-5100. That's 614-696-5100.
And we know the beer, the reputation precedes itself, and the food, I'm told, is excellent. I can't wait to tuck in.
I finally got to go there 2 weekends ago, and both were fantastic. Recommended 10 out of 10.
Oh, look at you with your 6G. You can go out to bars.
We will be there digging in person here in a few weeks, and we thank Saucy Brew Works. And we thank you for listening. Please like and subscribe. It's so important, I'm told. So please do that. Mash all the buttons. Thanks to Adam Taylor from the Filibuster. He was great and gave us a lot of interesting background on DC United about 3 hours ago, as it turns out. And DC United dealing with a whole ton of injuries. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of club they bring here on Saturday. In the meantime, we got the game at 8. Is it FS1 or FS2?
FS2, because Wednesday night is baseball night on FS1, but they will be showing Portland and Club America at 10:15 p.m.
All right, so it's FS2 on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, and then a weird start time on Saturday, 1:30, from Classic Crew Stadium.
And on Bali Sports, which, yes, people were having issues on Saturday, so I'm surprised Pat didn't say anything today.
Well, what happened? I watched it at a bar. But
it was just figuring out the channel numbers and the streaming.
Well, there was Reds and Indians at the same
time. You know, your classic hashtag Bali Sports problems.
I got you. All right. Ori, Pat, Bart, thank you. Adam, wherever you are, thank you. And we'll talk to you again as we face DC United later in the season. My name is Brian. Listen to my radio station, CD92.9. I would appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next week on the Bassett Report podcast.